Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. We welcome you. Today, the latest on energy drinks and why you have to be very concerned because they're alleged to have caused the deaths of several people. And I'm going to share with you the five health problems linked to them and what you can do if you need energy without risking your health in the process of consuming them. If you know someone who is suffering from postpartum depression, I'll show you an easy, inexpensive relief for that. Also, if you want to lose weight, live a longer life, what do you have to do? Simple information on that. And I was talking about telomeres, which are the ends of chromosomes, or the caps of chromosomes, and why we should try to lengthen them, and what will allow them to be lengthened, and what causes them to shorten. Well, simple story, if you shorten them, you die faster. If you lengthen them, you live longer. So I'll give you a blueprint for lengthening your lifespan. Also, GMOs, new information, and it's not good. From our environmental segment today, I'm going to give you an in-depth report from Stephen Starr, Physicians for Social Responsibility, on the cost and consequences of the Fukushima Daiichi disaster. It's going on 24/7. It's not in our news cycle, but it's extremely serious. And it could happen here because we have 33 of those same identical plants right here in the United States. And if time permits, a commentary today, our commentary from Rabbi Michael Lerner from Tycoon Magazine, Israel and Gaza, Enough is Enough, a blueprint for peace for both. This is the program for progressive minds, meaning people who want positive solutions to all of our problems. Let's begin. I have been concerned about the lack of real science, independent science, determining that our corn, our soy, which are so common in the American diet, or the animals that eat corn, such as cows, and soy, eaten by cows and chickens and pigs, that are then consumed by people, that those have not been tested to see, can an altered gene that you consume alter your genes? Well, the answer is yes. But here is something even more to be concerned about. This is from Salem Weekly Editors. It says the following. It has come to our attention that Kaiser Permanente, the largest managed health care organization in the United States, has advised its members against GMOs, genetically modified organisms in food. In its current newsletter, the membership is told the following, quote, GMOs have been added to our food supply since 1994, but most people don't know it because the United States does not require labeling of GMOs, end quote. Well, sounding like a radical organic health proponent, the huge corporate Kaiser continued, quote, despite what the biotech industry might say, there is little research on the long-term effects of GMOs on human health, end quote. Well, here's what we do know. All of the independent studies, not financed by the GMO companies like Monsanto and DuPont, but independent scientists, have shown GMOs can cause organ damage in rats, an inability to reproduce, and as we prove in our upcoming documentary, massive cancers. So, no reason to consume them. You've seen the ads on television, I'm sure, about the energy drink, the 5-hour energy drink. Well, according to Health Freedom Alliance, you should not be consuming these because when you combine them with alcohol, you can have some real serious effects. Now, earlier this week, an article in the New York Times added to that concern. They stated the Food and Drug Administration has received 13 death reports to the 5-hour energy a drink, and that the drink contains 215 milligrams of caffeine. That's about 2.5 cups of coffee. And here are the problems you should be very concerned about. First, you can't have a lot of caffeine, and almost all the energy supplements out there, including for athletes, are loaded with caffeine. That's bad for your heart. That can cause AFib, afibrillation, which is a dysfunction in the beating capacity of at least one chamber of the heart. And then people who have that frequently are put on blood-thinning medication because that could lead to a heart attack. It can also cause excessive pH change in the stomach, meaning you become highly acidic, which is what you do not want. Because when you're very acidic from eating sugar and alcohol and meat and fried foods, you're far more susceptible to flooding the body with inflammatory agents, which in turn can cause pain and prematurely age your cells. So there have been at least 30 reports filed with the FDA of very serious consequences, including heart attacks. Here are the big problems. Heart problems are at the top of the list. In fact, a 28-year-old Australian man suffered cardiac arrest after consuming 8 cans of an energy drink. Each can contained 80 milligrams and over a 7-hour period. Now, that person had no previous history of chest pain. And caffeine does boost your heart rate, and it increases your blood pressure. In fact, a Dr. John Higgins, a professor of medicine at the University of Texas Medical School in Houston, discovered that caffeine can cause heart cells to release calcium, which may affect heartbeat, leading to arrhythmias. And the drinks can also disrupt the normal balance of salt in the body, which has been linked to arrhythmias as well. And then you have the risk of miscarriage. The FDA has also received a report of miscarriage after consuming the 5-hour energy drink. Now, studies examining the effects of caffeine on miscarriage have shown that, yes, it is possible to have a miscarriage with this about 200 milligrams of caffeine per day. Now, you might get that from coffee, tea, soda, and hot chocolate. And any time I mention green tea, white tea, red tea, you can always get a decaffeinated form, which is what we should be consuming. You can also increase your risk of alcohol injury and dependence. Studies suggest that combining alcohol and energy drinks are dangerous. Although caffeine is a stimulant, research suggests it does not counteract the sedating effects of alcohol. And there's concern that mixing alcohol and energy drinks may keep people awake for a long period of time, allowing them to consume more alcohol than they ordinarily would. And there was a study of 1,100 college students found that those who downed the energy drinks frequently were about 250% more likely to meet the criteria for alcohol dependence, those who did not. And then you have the risk of drug abuse. There were a study of 1,000 students found that energy drink consumption in the second year of college was associated with an increased risk of prescription drug abuse. Now, the use of stimulants or prescription painkillers without a prescription is very common. And one explanation for the link is that energy drinks like prescription drugs might be regarded by some students as safer, more normative, or more socially acceptable than illicit street drugs. And that's according to Journal of Addictive Medicine. Finally, it can impair cognition. Although some students rely on energy drinks to pull all-nighters to study for exams, there is evidence that excessive levels of caffeine in the drinks impair cognition. There was a study that showed as little as 40 milligrams could make a difference and in reaction time. And then you start getting it up there to higher milligrams, you can have worsening of cognitive performance. One more reason to stay away from the energy drinks. Now, what if you want energy? Fine. Here's how you get energy. 10 milligrams of PQQ. That is a coenzyme. That'll give you natural energy by enhancing the natural energy cells of the body called the mitochondria, coenzyme Q10, at 300 or 400 or 500 milligrams. L-carnitine will do it at 500 to 1,000 milligrams. NADH at 20 to 50 milligrams will do it. Vitamin E from mixed tocopherols, that also will help. And, of course, ginseng, which is a natural energy enhancer and adaptogen, that'll do it. And ginkgo biloba, all important in allowing the body to increase its natural energy levels. Also, what I do, in fact, I have one right here for those of you who are looking over the over the computer. This is a quart of juice, and I have this every morning and in mid-morning. This is celery, cucumber, lemon, and apple, green apple. And this provides natural energy to the body. It stimulates cleaning of the liver. It's a great detoxifier. And yet it doesn't raise the blood sugar level. It gives you chlorophyll. It thins the blood, preventing stroke by keeping your red blood cells from clumping together. So just to have a really healthy, refreshing, nice and cold green apple celery juice. What you really taste is the green apple. Then put the juice of one lemon in it, and that gives it a little bit of a bite, which is nice also. Many women suffer from postpartum depression. In part, it's hormonal, getting a correction back to the hormones prior to pregnancy. A lot of women end up taking antidepressants. Some become suicidal. It's a serious condition. New research published in the Canadian Journal of Psychiatry, done at the University of Montreal, says the following. Women who suffer from postpartum depression can be helped by having omega-3 fatty acids. Now, of course, because omega-3 fatty acids are transferred from the mother to the fetus and later to her breastfeeding infant, maternal omega-3 levels go down during pregnancy and remain low for at least 6 weeks following birth. And furthermore, in addition to the specific biological circumstances of pregnant women, it's been found that in the United States that most people do not consume enough omega-3 fatty acids. It's easy to get your omega-3s. You can do it as I do from flax seeds, avocado, walnuts, walnut oil. Or you can do it as many other people do from the fish oils. Either way, I'm suggesting about 2,000 milligrams a day would be a rather ideal amount of the omega-3s. It also turns off inflammation and can turn off inflammation in your blood vessels. It can turn off inflammation in your liver and in your brain. That's good. That allows your brain to be protected longer, your liver to be recovering from, let's say, maybe a non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. All of which, and especially hepatitis, you're going to have inflammation. It pulls down that inflammation, which protects you. This is from a pharmacist who asked about wanting to lose weight and limiting calories. What else was needed? Well, there are supplements that can help your body biochemistry. If you're exercising, I recommend an hour a day for 6 days a week, and you're restricting all unnecessary calories. Now, what do I mean by that? If you were eating a really healthy diet, you would maintain metabolic balance, meaning if you're very active today, if you're exercising more than normal, you can have some extra calories. If you're more sedentary today, you have less calories. It's no different than if I'm traveling. Like today, I'm filming down in southern New Jersey and then coming back. Well, that's a two-hour trip down, filming for an hour, two-hour trip back. Just being in that environment, being on a train, then a car, and then indoors, my body's exposed to all this stuff. I'll take extra vitamin C, extra quercetin today. I'll take the extra nutrients. For example, I'll spray my mouth with some colloidal silver, my nose with colloidal silver, because I'm going to be around a lot of people. And I don't want my immune system being impacted by someone else who has a cold or flu in that environment that I wouldn't know, but my body would. Because once you're in an environment like a subway car, an elevator, an office, a theater, and someone's got a sickness, it's in the air. And that's how we get sick. So without being fanatical and just being reasonable and responsible, you just protect yourself. You spray. A little bit of spray goes a long way in strengthening your immune system. But also I take the other nutrients, like I'll take a little extra zinc, I'll take a little extra vitamin D and a little extra vitamin A. Here are the things you need if you want to lose weight by restricting calories and exercise. There is a nutrient, an amino acid, that is found in asparagus that increases insulin sensitivity, which helps your body store energy in muscles rather than storing it as fat. It is called asparagine, and A-S-P-A-R-A-G-I-N-E. Then you have biotin. Now, biotin is a very important B vitamin because it strengthens your metabolism. It helps normalize your blood sugar, and that's very important if you have a tendency towards high blood sugar, and it reduces insulin, and it helps the body not get fat. Then, of course, vitamin A is very good because it tells your genes to stop storing all the food you eat as fat. Niacin is very good because it increases a natural fat-burning hormone called adipotensin. And then you have chromium, which is important for being more sensitive to insulin and reducing body fat, and lipoic acid, like alpha-lipoic acid, which stabilizes blood sugar. And it helps to move glucose into the cells. It helps burn carbohydrates more effectively. Magnesium, which is important. It helps converting carbs and sugar into fuel. So those are the nutrients that can make a difference. And finally, vitamin C is critical for developing the fetal brain. Now, this is new information from the journal PLOS One. It was done at the University of Copenhagen, and what they found was that vitamin C plays a very significant role in fetal brain development. And guinea pigs, along with humans, cannot manufacture their own vitamin C, which makes them a useful animal model for ascorbate deficiency. And what they found was that that vitamin C in this experiment was essential to all forms of things. Like, for example, when they examined pups' brains, it was found that those born to vitamin C deficient mothers had a reduction in the volume of the hippocampus. Now, that's where we store our memory. And supplementing these pups with vitamin C after birth did not appear to undo the damage done by the prenatal environment. Quote, even marginal vitamin C deficiency in the mother stunts the fetal hippocampus, the important memory center, by 10 to 15%, preventing the brain from optimal development. So my suggestion is that women who smoke, you're going to have deficiencies. Take drugs, deficiencies. If you take aspirin, deficiencies. If you take alcohol, deficiencies of vitamin C. So just remember, if you are deficient in vitamin C, your developing fetus, brain could be deficient, and that could have consequences. I'm Gary Nall. That's our health and nutrition segment of our program. Now I want to share some insights on the environment. First, acid in the environment. I'm just completing a major documentary on the 12 tipping points. I've been working on it for many years. And where we're focused on global warming, and rightly so, we're not paying attention to at least 20 other major environmental disasters, including the acidification of our water. If you were to drive up through Maine, as I have, you'll see beautiful tall trees the entire route. If you were to take a helicopter and go up about 5,000 feet and then start to look on both sides of those beautiful tree-lined roads, you would see massive burn-off, not because of fire, but because of acid rain and creating highly acidic conditions. The water doesn't bear fish in many places, and the trees are adversely affected as well. Now, this is from Tara Daly from Boulder, Colorado. And here's what they say. Climate change and extreme weather events grab the headlines, but there's another lesser-known global change underway on land, in the seas, in the air. Acidification. It turns out that combustion of fossil fuels, smelting of ores, mining of coal, and melting all this, and applications of nitrogen fertilizer to soils are all driving down the pH of the water, air, and soil rates far faster than the Earth's natural systems can buffer it, posing threats to both land and sea life. Quote, it's a bigger picture than most of us know, says Janet Herman of the Department of Environmental Science at the University of Virginia. Her and her colleagues discovered that despite the fact that they worked on different kinds of acidification in the environment, they were not well informed about the matter beyond their own specialties. So they've done an extensive review of scientific papers about all kinds of environmental acidification and are presenting their work to show everyone. And acidification is both a local and a global problem, since it can be as close as nearby stream contaminated by mine tailings, or as far-reaching as the world's oceans, which are becoming more acidic as sea life absorbs higher concentrations of carbon dioxide than humans dump into the atmosphere by burning fossil fuels. And coal gives a double whammy by being the biggest contributor to anthropogenic carbon dioxide to the global atmosphere, as well as creating regional acidification. Coal burning is famous for creating acid rain, which had dramatic environmental impacts on forests and streams and lakes in eastern North America and Europe. So just one thing that we should be aware of, just become aware that acidification is an issue. And that's why everyone who keeps saying, well, we should go back to drilling, more drilling in Montana, more drilling off the coast of California near San Diego, big fields of oil out there. It's still with natural gas, with gas hydrofracking, with oil, it's still creating massive acidification and global warming. We have to go towards wind, ideally, off the coast of our oceans on the west and east coast, and in the great mountain range, where there's few inhabitants, but a great deal of wind at the Great Continental Divide. If any of you have ever flown into Denver, you know that right there is the Continental Divide, and it has all these high peaks, and you get hit with all that wind turbulence, even at 30, 40,000 feet. That's where you could put massive amounts of wind turbines that could collect the electricity. Then we have solar. We have all this desert in California, Nevada, New Mexico, the high deserts in New Mexico, up around Santa Fe, in Texas. You have lots of areas of Florida. You could put these in, would not obstruct any of the development or human habitation or animal habitation, but would provide massive energy. You could have geothermal. We have thousands upon thousands of hot springs in the United States. We don't use any of them for power, yet other countries like Iceland do. So the technology is there and very efficient. And most importantly, and most consistent, would be wave power. Just putting all of these generators, these turbines that work underwater, and they don't move fast, they move slow, but they work and they create electricity because the waves are always coming in and always going out. So you could put these completely around the United States. So we have more than enough completely natural, non-polluting, sustainable energy sources. If we focus on those, then we have a shot at the future. How bad is it? This is just in today. The World Bank, mind you, that's the very orthodox World Bank, reports, quote, catastrophic consequences of global warming. Economic groups' call to action acknowledges climate campaigners' years of warning. So this is the latest. So even the major bankers are now predicting that if countries don't pay attention to what's happening with global warming, they're going to have severe drought. They're going to use up their water. They're going to have worse storms, dust storms, rainstorms, snow storms, tornadoes, and hurricanes. It's all going to get bad. So that's the latest. Now, an in-depth report on something that I've been working on and following for some time, and that is, why aren't we looking at the real consequences of what it means to live in a dangerous area where the government is lying to the people, that manipulates the statistics so it doesn't have to deal with relocating millions of people? It's allowing its people to eat heavy radiated foods by simply raising the amount that's allowed in a food. And yet we have done nothing about it in the United States. And I say nothing, I mean absolutely nothing. This is from Stephen Starr, Physicians for Social Responsibility. I'll quote this. The destruction of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in March of 2011 caused an earthquake and subsequent tsunami, resulted in massive radioactive contamination of the Japanese mainland. In November 2011, the Japanese science ministry reported that long-lived radioactive cesium had contaminated 11,580 square miles of the land surface of Japan. Some 4,500 square miles, an area almost the size of Connecticut, was found to have radiation levels that exceeded Japan's allowable exposure of 1 MSV per year. About a month after the disaster, Japan chose to drastically increase its official safe radiation exposure levels from 1 MSV to 20. That's a 2,000% increase, higher than the United States exposure limit. This allowed the Japanese government to downplay the dangers of the fallout and avoid evacuation of many badly contaminated areas. However, all the land within 12 miles of the destroyed nuclear power plant, encompassing an area of about 230 square miles, and an additional 80 square miles located northwest of the plant, were declared too radioactive for human habitation. All living entities had to be removed immediately to other locations because this was, quote, permanent exclusion zones. Now, here is a challenge to this. What law of physics do you know of that says that if you live 12 miles and 1 foot beyond the barrier, you're safe? The winds suddenly stop blowing at 12 miles? That all radiation stops going forward at 12 miles? Radiation knows no boundaries. It will go as far as the wind carries it, the rain carries it. And if it's in the ground, it just continues to go down into the ground. So this is really bad. The precise value of the abandoned cities and towns and agricultural lands and businesses and homes and property located within the 310 square miles of the exclusion zones is estimated to be at $500 billion. Now, mind you, that's just in the immediate vicinity. Could you imagine the cost if they started to evacuate Tokyo with 40 million people, the largest city in Japan? You're looking at tens of trillions of dollars. Radioactive cesium has taken up residence in the exclusion zone, replacing the human inhabitants. Cesium-137 has a half-life of 30 years, and since it takes about 10 half-lives for a radionuclide to disappear, it will maintain ownership of the exclusion zone for centuries. Once a large amount of radioactive cesium enters an ecosystem, it quickly becomes ubiquitous, contaminating the water, the soil, the plants, and the animals. It has been detected in large range of Japanese foodstuffs, including spinach, tea leaves, milk, beef, and freshwater fish, up to 200 miles from Fukushima. By the way, that's within the vicinity of Tokyo. Radioactive cesium bioaccumulates, it bioconcentrates, it biomagnifies as it moves up the food chain. Routine ingestion of foods contaminated with so-called low levels of radioactive cesium have been shown to lead to bioaccumulation in your heart, your endocrine system, as well as your kidneys and small intestine and pancreas and spleen and liver. This process occurs much faster in children than adults, and children are many times more susceptible than adults to the effects of ionizing radiation their internal organs can then be exposed to. Decontamination in the exclusion zones is virtually futile. Efforts to clean up highly contaminated areas are generally failing because melting snow and rainwater run off the contaminated hills and around the area and return to recontaminate homes and land. Diversion ditches have failed to stop the process. Areas significantly contaminated with radioactive cesium and other long-lived radionuclides can no longer sell and export agricultural crops. In addition to its efforts and its effects on land, Fukushima disaster produced the largest discharge of radioactive material in the ocean in history. 15 months after 733,000 curies of radioactive cesium were dumped into the Pacific, 56% of all fish catches off Japan were found to be contaminated with it. Fishing continues to be banned off the coast of Fukushima, where 40% of bottom-feeding fish, sole, halibut, and cod, were recently found to have radioactive cesium levels much higher than current Japanese regulatory limits. Meanwhile, the destroyed Fukushima reactors and spent fuel ponds, which hold huge quantities of radioactive waste, are far from being stabilized. Reactors 1, 2, and 3 every day discharge radioactive gases that emit a billion becquerels of radiation. The uranium cores of reactors 1, 2, and 3, which completely melted down and then melted through the bottom of the steel reactor vessel, will continue to produce enormous amounts of radiation and heat for many years. Every day, 10 tons of seawater is poured onto each of the melted cores. The water becomes intensely radioactive and then rapidly leaks out of the containment into the adjacent turbine building. It is then pumped through an expensive cooling system that traps the radioactivity in filters the size of small cars, which become highly radioactive and are being placed in a nearby field. 50 million gallons of intensely radioactive water have already been collected and stored on site. Thousands of additional radioactive gallons continue to accumulate every day, and the jury-rigged pipe system connecting the storage tanks remain at risk should another large quake strike the area. Now, other forms of maintenance are also required to avoid potentially catastrophic radiation-releasing events. The intense gamma radiation from the melted fuel causes the seawater to disassociate into hydrogen and oxygen gas. In order to prevent further hydrogen explosions, which have already destroyed the buildings housing 1, 3, and 4, nitrogen gas must be continually pumped into the leak containment vessel, and this process must continue for another 7 years. Reactor building number 4 was severely damaged by the earthquake and a massive hydrogen explosion. It holds spent fuel rods of 1,532 nuclear fuel assemblies, which contain about 1,000% more radioactive cesium than was released by Chernobyl disaster. Should Building 4 collapse, its fuel pool would lose its cooling water, and the gamma radiation from the exposed fuel assemblies would then be immediately lethal to anyone in the area. It would be impossible to access the site, including the common pool that contains 6,000 fuel rods, which is located 50 feet, that's it, 50 feet from Building 4. This collapse of Building 4 could lead to the release of many times more radiation than has already escaped from Fukushima. This would leave, listen carefully to this, quote, "This would leave much of Japan uninhabitable and would constitute a global disaster." Let me repeat that. This would leave much of Japan uninhabitable and would constitute a global disaster. Well, they're looking at a timetable of how long it's going to take just to remove the spent fuel rods. They're looking at a minimum of 2.5 years. Fine. And they've got what? They've got no earthquakes going to happen. If there's an earthquake larger than 6, it's going to cause all this to come about. Just a 6. So that is serious. You would think that we, our government, would make this an issue to help decontaminate it to help remove these spent fuel rods, to help encase this, but we're not making this an issue at all. That's a big mistake. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with our commentary and then your calls. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. We're listened to in 140 countries, and I'm always encouraged by your emails and spreading information, sharing it person to person. We're going to go to our commentary in a moment, then your opportunity to call in and share your points of view. No guest today because of the commentary, and I thought it was more important. And a couple of program announcements. I'm always trying to find ways to help those individuals who need help with their health. And we have a new employee. He has a baccalaureate in nutrition and exercise sciences from CUNY. He has a master's working at University of Bridgeport in clinical nutrition. And he is a specialist in herbs. And that's great because I didn't have an herbalist. And he works with all kinds of people in all kinds of conditions. He's there to help you for free. It's a public service. I give him a very good living wage with health benefits so that he can help you for free. So you can call him. His name is Michael. Michael can be reached at 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000, especially if you need diet advice and rebalancing biochemistry, nutritional chemistry. He's got a lot of experience and very nice guy to work with. In just 3 weeks, we will be premiering the new feature film on genetically modified foods at the Lowe's Theater on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. We sold out with one announcement, the first showing, and so we've gone to the largest theater in there, and that will be full as well. I'd like you to join us. I'll be there. We'll have a panel of experts afterwards. This is a really hard-hitting film, but more importantly, it provides you with the tools you need to counter any of the arguments that are pro-GMO arguments. And they have spent tens of millions of dollars and bought scientists and bought doctors and celebrities to spout off about how good GMO is. This film will just eviscerate every pro-GMO argument that it is. This is the film that tells you the truth. I filmed in France. I filmed in England. I filmed in Scotland. I filmed in the Himalayas, in India, in Canada, all over the United States. This is it. This is the newest hard-hitting film. And it is packed with information and insight that no one's seen before, didn't know existed. Join me on December 6th at 7 p.m. You can't just show up, because it's going to be packed. Call and make a reservation. It's only $30, and any profits made will go to the Daily Bread. I have been there many times. I send them money. I try to help because they, in turn, help feed every day the homeless in that area of Florida, including the homeless vets. and they do a good job, as George Taylor does with the Homeless Vet Group, and I send him a check as well. Call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422, or you can go up on GaryNall.com and register over the internet, and when it's full, we'll let you know. But we have now the largest theater, and as all of our films, they're always packed. Now for our special of the week. We have two. The first is a new invention that I have out. It's called Cruciferous Stuff. It's raw, it's all natural, very rich in the phytonutrients, big size, 500 grams, delicious tasting, and the phytonutrients, calories low, 40. And here's what I put in here. I put in coca, 5,000 milligrams. Broccoli, big amount, 750 milligrams. Collard greens, Brussels sprouts, watercress, kale, mustard seed, apple pectin, turnip, arugula, turmeric, 200 milligrams, by the way, of turmeric, horseradish, radish sprouts, daikon radish, ginger root. All that is in there. And a small amount of natural occurring caffeine from the coca, but it's a small amount. This is called Cruciferous Stuff. Now, I'm not going to tell you what I know it does, but it's not difficult for you to know that we should be having not just a lot of vegetables and fruits every day, but certain types of vegetables were uniquely important for us, the cruciferous vegetables. So I'd like for you to get your cruciferous stuff and have it every day. 500 milligrams, unless, for example, unless you have a diseased thyroid and your doctor says you can't have cruciferous vegetables, this is just one of the most important things you can put in your body. I never make a claim, never have, and I won't. But that doesn't prevent you from going up and Googling radish sprouts, broccoli sprouts, watercress, Brussels sprouts, arugula, turmeric. Just Google turmeric, T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C, at 200 milligrams, and look at all that it does. Well, this gives you all of it in a delicious-tasting carrier food, which is the coca, because otherwise it's very bitter. And that's why I use the coca, which is also very beneficial. And look up all the good studies on it as well. Just go up there and Google it in and know how to spell it correctly. And if you spell it correctly and you look online, you're going to say, wow, I didn't know that it would do all that stuff. Well, it does all that. Just Google C-O-C-O-A. Call to get a great deal on this. The lowest price ever, $53.99 plus shipping and handling. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And they asked me to mention this. We've been out of supercarnosine. This, in my opinion, is the single most important nutrient that I know of all the nutrients in nature, the impact, the telomeres, and hence the cells. And this is vegan capsules. You're getting L-carnosine and acetyl-L-carnitine together in the same capsule. So give a call, because that's going to be on special too. So you can get your super L-carnosine. There's just nothing like it. Call 877-627-5065. I'm Gary Noll, and now to a commentary. Today's commentary is not mine. This is from Rabbi Michael Lerner, who, by the way, will be starting a program here on the Progressive Radio Network in the near future, along with Gerald Salante and Max Kaiser and a whole group of very progressive-minded philosophers, economists, and people who are very highly ethical. Here's what he says about the conflict. Because last night, Sean Hannity had on Oliver North, remember him? Remember his background before it was sanitized on Fox, much like Judith Miller and so many of the others? His solution was invade Iran. That's how you don't criticize Israel for anything. Just invade Iran, because it's Iran who's really the problem. No, it isn't. Here's what Rabbi Michael Lerner has to say. All the usual suspects are cheering on their respective sides in the latest struggle between Israel and Palestine being fought out at the expense of some Israeli and more Palestinian civilian lives. I've been overwhelmed with sadness at the tragic loss of lives and harm to the bodies of Israeli and Palestinian citizens, and outraged at all those who continue to justify their side and demean the other, implicitly cheering on the violence even as they officially deplore it. Enough is enough. Stop the violence immediately. First step, the international community, led by the U.S., should impose an immediate ceasefire on all sides of the struggle and should introduce an international peace force to restrain and, if necessary, arrest anyone involved in any side of the struggle who is acting to continue the violence. That force should be equally charged with arresting any military figures on the Israeli side or guerrilla forces on the Palestinian side that are attempting to engage in hostilities. Second step, hold an international conference to create a politically and economically viable Palestinian state living in peace with Israel. Third step, begin a truth and reconciliation process to coincide with implementing the creation of a politically and economically viable Palestinian state. So how do we get there? Given the apparent willingness of everyone, from Obama to the most liberal Democrats in Congress, to want to see Israel given carte blanche to do what it will to punish Hamas, and even the normally predictable peaceful voices are keeping a very low profile. We have to move the focus from who did what to whom and how badly should we feel to the more significant question, how do we use this moment to push beyond the usual cacophony of righteous believers in the goodness of their side's cause so that we can realize that the issue for all humanity is how to put love and kindness and caring for each other and for the earth on our collective agenda, realizing that the human race simply cannot allow itself to be distracted by outrageous and endless vicious nationalistic struggles. Yes, there are steps that could be taken to guarantee a lasting ceasefire. Israel could offer to end the blockades of Gaza, which in any event has been ineffective in keeping Hamas from gaining long-range missile capabilities, and end all drones over flights in both the West Bank and Gaza, and all targeted assassinations in exchange for Hamas agreeing to allow international monitors search all forms of entry to Gaza to prevent that military hardware from being imported, and simultaneously agreeing to prevent all future bombardment of Israeli targets and to punish those engaged in rogue actions of that sort, like the Islamic Jihad or whoever else tries to provoke war by shooting at Israel from Gaza. This same force should be policing West Bank settlers, some of whom are committed to disrupting any peace process that might lead to reduction in the West Bank settlements. These are bold steps, but no such moves are likely to work without a fundamental change of attitude, a new approach of compassion for each side by the other, the adoption of a zero tolerance of war as a solution to anyone's problems, and the replacing the strategy of "we'll show them how tough we are" attitude that I call a strategy of domination with a new strategy of generosity. We'll show them how much we care for them beyond any reasonable expectations. The first step in this process is time the Israelis acknowledge the cost of their occupation and denial of fundamental democratic and human rights on the Palestinian people. Much of the Israeli media gives little attention to the ongoing violence directed at Palestinians, such as outright stealing of land from Palestinian farmers, IDF suppression of nonviolent demonstrations against the occupation, and holding Palestinians without charges. Targeted assassinations now carried out by drones, whose daily presence in the skies over Gaza make that tiny area of the world the largest outdoor prison. Ironically, except for the tiny percentage of Israelis who read Haaretz, most Israelis don't even have a clue about what the daily oppressive reality is like for people in the West Bank, much less for the million-plus human beings living in Gaza. The majority of Israelis go about daily life oblivious to the suffering that the status quo generates until Palestinians launch their, thankfully, mostly ineffective missiles against hapless citizens in southern Israeli towns. And when Israelis flex their overwhelming military muscles, the leaders of the organized Jewish community in the U.S. jump into line screaming that Israel's existence is in danger, a complete fantasy, and that the U.S. must support its ally, which meanwhile is scheming how to drag the U.S. into a war with Iran. While it is true, as Palestinians and their global supporters purport, that Israel can and does murder far more Palestinians than Hamas murders Israeli citizens, this ignores the suffering of citizens in Israel, who for years now have regularly faced rockets launched from Gaza that force them to run to shelters to protect their families from the potential murderous impact of those Hamas-generated missiles, and how millions of Israelis are once again experiencing the fear of mass annihilation. The rockets fired at Tel Aviv and Jerusalem reinforce the Holocaust traumas that pervade Jewish consciousness and provides the most right-wing elements in the Israeli government with precisely the kind of so-called evidence it needs that there can be no two-state solution because the Palestinian Authority can't control Hamas, hence can't deliver a lasting peace agreement. While it is true, as Palestinians and their global supporters purport, that Israel can and does murder far more Palestinians than Hamas murders Israeli citizens, nonetheless, the murder of civilians on either side only builds resentment and entrenches both sides in their self-righteous indignation. As civilians, both sides hide in terror, one in their bomb shelters, the other hiding wherever they can. Their political leaders play a game of chess to promote their position and prolong the fighting, when in actuality neither Hamas nor Netanyahu government want peace. Hamas wants to subvert the Palestinian Authority efforts to get Palestine a higher status of the United Nations because that would make Hamas less viable in the coming Palestinian national elections. Its willingness to continue these symbolic and more recently less symbolic and more substantive launchings of missiles against Israeli targets are not aimed at winning anything, though some may justify them morally as the response of the powerless to the ongoing evil of the Israeli occupation and its murderous day-to-day reality. We must also note that it is a cynical ploy by Hamas to undermine the Palestinian Authority's 7 years of nonviolence and seeking accommodation with Israel. At the same time, Palestinian nonviolence is the last thing the Netanyahu government wants. Hence, its provocative policies and statements as it continues to undermine the possibility of a two-state solution that it deceptively claims to still support, and now escalating the violence against Palestinian civilians as its calling card for the forthcoming Israeli elections. Netanyahu is willing to endanger the lives of Israelis by failing to reward Palestinian nonviolence from the Palestinian Authority, but instead escalating violence against Gaza. It's his ticket not only to get reelected, but also his legacy as the prime minister who stood firm against outside pressure. Nothing Israel can offer short of ending the occupation now and creating a politically and economically viable Palestinian state will change anything. A ceasefire will lead to continuation of an awful status quo. Yet the kind of generous offer that I have written about in my book is not going to happen until there is a much larger change in the consciousness not only of Israelis and Palestinians, but of their champions and cheerleaders around the world. What is needed now from both sides is to approach the other with a recognition that their own well-being depends upon the well-being of the other side, and that as a first step toward enhancing that well-being is to agree to resolve remaining issues without violence and to teach their own people a way of compassionately understanding the discourse and experience of the other side, learning to tell the other side's story with an open-hearted spirit of generosity, and not for the sake of some flaky good feeling, but for the sake of realizing that 5,000 years of war-making by the countries of the world has not led to a safety and security, but to endless suffering. In short, what is needed is a new global ethos of recognizing that our well-beings depend upon the well-being of everyone else alive today and the well-being of the planet itself. End quote, Rabbi Michael Lerner. I'm Gary Knoll. Time now for Talk Back. Any of the topics that you would like to discuss is open for you now at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We'd like to hear from you. Let's say hello to Harvey. Harvey, are you in Berkeley?
Yes. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
And thanks for bringing us into the light. Thanks for opening our eyes. I appreciate it. Love your program.
Thank you.
Well, in our current situation, the cost of energy is tied to the cost of commodities. Like every time the price of gasoline goes up, the price of food is soon to follow. And it's the poor people, kids, and the elderly who suffer from this. And I'd like to see the uncoupling of our energy and food, you know, the uncoupling of that connection. And I'd like to see us go for renewable energy and cover our rooftops with solar panels and plug, you know, become star-powered. Our energy transportation systems become star-powered. We plug into the sun. And then we could decouple that situation so that every time there was an emergency or the oil companies raised their prices, we wouldn't be vulnerable for the rising of food and gas prices, because energy would be cheap and abundant and plentiful, and we wouldn't be at their beck and call. It's a game that they use to squeeze us. And and again, I think that that's the way to go, is to go renewable so that we don't have to pay more for food as the energy prices rise.
I absolutely agree with you. And I will address this on an upcoming program where we're going to do all the different energy experts. Renewable energy, as I said earlier in the program, we should be focusing on solar, wind, geothermal, but not wind in the countryside, because that becomes a blight and it adversely affects the value of the person's property, and the noise that it makes can cause enormous suffering to people. But I'm talking about in non-populated areas, plus the wind power from the wave power. So that's more than enough options we have, and all of those have been proven effective. So it's not as if we're starting at the beginning. Thank you very much, Harvey. I appreciate your input. George from Connecticut. Hi, George.
Hi, Gary. I wanted to run an idea by you. If you don't know how to approach it, maybe you can contemplate it. I'm going to be at the first screening. Maybe I can ask you again there if you can ask somebody. I had an idea. You know, we are living in a corporate state. Most people don't realize it. Our country is really incorporated. And I'm so sick and tired of having senators and congressmen act like potted plants and not object to these unconstitutional things they constantly do, or the wars. And related to that, can't we sue these guys, because they're supposed to be representing, they're supposed to be the ones that can authorize a war or not authorize a war. And they're basically embezzling our money. So,
okay.
You know, rolling this into one, you would think you should be able to...
George, did you have some caffeine this morning? I'll bet you did. Because, George, you know you can't sue a legislator for voting on or against a particular piece of legislation, for introducing a piece of legislation. What you can do is vote in a different type of populist legislator. Now, I'm sure you voted third party, as all of us who care about our future do, but there is a larger issue I would address that ties into your frustration. I understand your frustration, and it's legitimate. The other day, I was watching the only news show I ever watch, because it's the only legitimate news show on television, Al Jazeera. And there was a segment where it opened up with a woman picking up acorns in the woods. And then we get to learn from the woman that she is a professional. I don't know whether she was an accountant or a professor, and her husband also, but they moved from a major city in Spain, like Madrid, where she said that her salary was cut by over 30%, and her costs of living were so high that she was losing money. It was simply not sustainable. But they were in their 30s, and they had known no other life than urban life. And then, at the time that her and her husband and children were going through this enormously traumatizing time of high unemployment in Spain, if you're under 35, it's over 55% unemployment, a small community, which had been losing population to the booming economy in Spain for about 20 years, it decided to do something innovative. Just a regular little community, pull back the camera, it's a pretty little community, I'm going to guess, based on the number of houses I saw, probably about 300 or 400 people. It began to advertise for inexpensive living, rent, for example, and do your own organic gardening, they said. So now these people saw the ad, went out, looked, loved what they found, and now they have a quality of life. It's not the urban life, but it's a non-debtor's life. Now they can actually grow their food. She's out there getting the acorns. That's what she does. She sells the acorns. But they also have a garden. And now they're sharing with other people. So now they have their own home, which they can afford. They're no longer in debt, which they were before. And they're in a rural environment, which was better for their children. They don't have the crime. They have nature. I'm seeing, and now that's happening all over Spain. I believe it'll start happening in Greece and Italy and France and Ireland as well. And hence, I believe that we should look in the United States of moving back to the country. I believe the future, without question, for the majority of people, the majority, not everyone, will be growing your own food, living in small communities, and being self-sufficient, where you can then implement your ecological policies, your food policies, your sustainable policies. But you can't do it in the middle of a city. The urban and suburban lifestyles we've known it is over. It is no longer going to be able to be repaired, improved. It is just completely broken. And the entire myth that work hard, buy a house, live the American dream, use the equity in your house as an ATM machine to buy your lifestyle improvements, all that is gone. It has been disproven. It was all a bubble, and the bubble has burst. Get back to the land. Get back to the country. Get into sustainable environments. That's the future. Thank you. I appreciate your call, George. In studio, Luann Panessi. Your last turn here, Luann.
Hi, Gary. I've gotten a lot of emails from your audience. This is a woman that says, my husband is an economist, and he does not listen to your program. However, I do, and I have for over 18 years. I was giving him information about the fact that you stated that the real problems in America stem from the disproportionate amount of interest that's earned by the banks from mortgages, credit cards, student loans, and that it can increase the cost of an item by between 20 and 40%. Turns out you were right. This morning, my husband acknowledged that I had given him the correct information, that this was, in fact, the biggest single cause of America's financial dilemma. She says, you've been right on every single issue. Also, the past 2 years, on dozens of occasions, I've heard you mention that Greece and Spain would throw at their politicians and refuse to pay any more money to the European banks and bondholders. Well, this is actually happening. There's been a general strike of millions of people in France, Spain, Greece, and Portugal. They are but one step away from overthrowing their governments, stopping the euro, and not giving another dime to the bankers. And you accurately predicted this. No one else did, not on any other media outlet that she knows of. She says, I listen every day because I'm empowered by every program, and she thanks you.
I appreciate those. I believe that we're only about a year away from seeing Greece overthrow its government and Spain overthrow its government. What I mean by overthrow, meaning they will refuse to pay any taxes. They will take over the offices. They will tell these individuals who are all pro-corporation, pro-banks, that you're no longer in power, and then elect real people, their own citizens, and they will withdraw from the euro. They will redevelop their own currency, even at a grossly reduced value of it, but at least they won't have the debt no longer be put through these draconian privatization programs where their water's privatized, their highways are privatized, their... If you could privatize air, someone would do that. And they'll rebuild themselves and have a sustainable future. They'll go through about 4 or 5 rough years, but then they have a future. If they don't do this, they'll have no future. They'll be permanently in debt to the banks that have an astronomical margin of profit in every one of these transactions. We're out of time. I thank you all for taking your time to listen. I look forward to sharing more on the next program. Have a nice day.